Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Well, I thought we were going to get Can You Stand the Rain, so this might be a fireball offense. Although this is my third-ranked New Edition song.
I wonder if Scott Ogilvie is on board with New Edition.
Christina Grassi acknowledged that she was on board with New Edition, but she thought I was asking her to sing, and I would never do that to anyone.
Seemed like you were a little bit.
That's why she hung up on us, I think. Yeah.
Hopefully Scott doesn't hang up on us. But he's in front of the show. He was in studio.
Probably a good singer himself.
Morning, Scott.
Good morning, guys. You can ask me to sing, but you won't like it.
All right. Are you a New Edition fan?
I can't. I'm so old, I feel like I don't even remember if I liked New Edition.
But I think I don't know your age. I would imagine that you're young. You're in your 30s, right? That's my guess.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then that makes you younger than all of us.
That's what we do on the show. We ask salaries and age. We put everyone on the spot.
Right. Absolutely. Why not? Scott Ogilvie with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, the alderman of the 24th Ward. We had Christina Grassi on at 8 o'clock. Great to have you with us now on the program. What's your takeaway from what took place yesterday? Because just following it on Twitter, a variety of reporters covering it, it certainly seemed like bizarro world to the outsider. What was it like to somebody on the inside?
It was probably a little bit less dramatic in the room, I suppose, because you kind of can see, you know, what's going on. But, yeah, I mean, we, at least from my perspective, we got some compromise from the ownership group. We got some new sources of revenue for the city from the project. And at that point in my mind, it reached a point where I thought it was acceptable and we could put it on the ballot and voters can make the decision if this is something they want to prioritize or not. So at that point, it moved forward.
You were outspoken that you felt the ticket tax should be part of this deal. It wasn't in the early going. It was voted down, and Conway, the chairman of the committee, actually voted against it so that he could use that parliamentary procedure, I guess you'd call it, where he can reconsider it later because he was on the prevailing side. Did you know at that point that that was what he was planning to do? And did you know that the folks behind the stadium would be willing to go ahead and concede that the tax on the tickets be part of it?
Well, yeah. So that happens pretty frequently when a vote kind of goes against somebody, that they'll vote against it because then they can bring it back up if something changes. But I did not know that we'd be able to kind of reach that compromise. I mean, I would have been happy to get the whole 5% ticket tax. They made the offer for half the ticket tax, and we're kind of running out of time. So at that point, I said, okay, I can vote yes. And we locked in some of the money for the McKee Northside TIF area. Now it just goes into this project. So we kind of defined that incentive, whereas previously it was kind of vague. So at the end of the day, the city is paying less. We have less of a financial obligation, and we have a source of revenue from the ticket tax that I thought was very important because it means fans who come to games are helping to generate revenue for the city and pay for the stadium and not kind of getting a free ride like they were with the initial bill.
It seems like you guys needed the hammer of the proposal actually going away before they were willing to acquiesce on the ticket tax.
Yeah, and the ticket tax really doesn't hurt the team, to be honest. It's not necessarily going to be money out of their pocket. It should be money from soccer fans. But yeah, I mean, there's been a dynamic where people who want incentives frequently believe that they're not going to hear no. So they don't have quite as much reason to compromise as we might like. But there were five of us on the committee who were very willing to vote no on this until the proposal improved.
I'm surprised the ownership group was hesitant at all to give you the ticket tax. That just goes right on the price of the ticket, right? So if a ticket's $20, now it would be $20.50?
It's not a sales tax, so it's not directly paid by the fan. It is paid by the team, but effectively what the team can do is just bump their prices 2.5% for tickets and, you know, recoup that. So it adds a very tiny amount of risk to the team, but not that much, and I think it won't hurt them at all in the long run. And then it'll generate, on the optimistic side, it'll generate at least another $12 million in city revenue. So
there are three hurdles left to pass, because the board has to pass the Metrolink tax and whether or not to put the stadium proposal up for a public vote, and then the public has to approve it. What do you think the chances of this thing going forward are?
I think it will get on the ballot in April. The team's going to have to run a good campaign to get it passed. It's definitely not wildly popular among voters based on the polling. But if they do a good campaign, I think they'll definitely have a shot. And voters will be able to make a decision, and the decision will be between soccer and soccer stadium, or allocating that money in a different way, or just, you know, saying no to all of it. So I think we have a reasonable set of options before the voters, and we'll trust that they'll make the decision that they think is most important.
Scott Ogilvie, the alderman of the 24th Ward, is our guest right now here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Scott playing a large role in the developments yesterday morning and afternoon with the MLS project. We were lucky enough to have Christina Grassi also join the program at 8 o'clock, and I want to play this sound for you regarding the Scott Trade Center situation. As you were on the show earlier this week, and when you were with us, Scott, that you felt confident that the Scott Trade Center, there would be some agreement at some point in 2017 to get funding for the upkeep and renovations to Scott Trade Center. Here is what Alderman Gracia had to say when she was with us about an hour ago.
$4 million that comes out of general revenue just off the top isn't something that our finances can handle at this point. We're looking at, as Paul Payne has testified, our budget director at a $20 million shortfall right now for next fiscal year, and we always have to balance our budget, so cuts are going to have to come somewhere, and I don't think spending $4 million on hockey is the best way to do it. So hopefully we'll be able to make something smarter happen. I know that there are discussions. You know, the treasurer's office owns the parking garage that's attached to Scott Trade, and they have enough money to help with that piece of it, and I think that's probably a smarter way to go.
That's Christina Gracia on this program about an hour ago. What are your thoughts on what she had to say regarding that and the potential for that to get done this year, Scott?
Yeah, I agree. It's not such a rush on that one. But
you expressed optimism when you were with us a couple days ago, and she didn't necessarily share that. And so I was wondering if there's a difference in thought specific on Scott Trade for you both.
I said 2017, and there's still 8 months left.
Right, exactly. But I asked her in 2017, and she didn't sound...
10 months left, sorry.
Right.
So I guess my point is, so we've got Scott Trade, we've got the Convention Center, and we've got the Dome. And Dome and Convention Center also have a desire for a lot of investment there, and in fact, more money to the Dome and Convention Center. And I think a lot of people would like to handle these things kind of at the same time in the same way, because we don't want to do one and then feel like, oh, we spent the money we have, we can't do the other one. I think we want to look at these as, they're obviously separate properties, but they're both owned by the city, and some people, including myself, feel like we should connect them in some way to come up with a solution that works for both of them, because we don't want to pit, and this started to happen a little bit yesterday, we don't want to pit one of them against the other one, because, you know, you could say they're both kind of equally important.
But you do believe the renovations at Scott Trade are necessary, correct?
Some level. I mean, I it's hard to know if the list of improvements that were provided to us, you know, if the entire list is 100% essential, or if some of those things there can be compromises on that reduce the cost a little bit. I forget the exact number, but, you know, it is an itemized list, and it may be worthwhile, you know, to have a new mayor's office in a couple months kind of revisit this, go back through, and also give the Blues a little bit more time to think creatively about how to make this happen.
With the big work going on at the Arch and the spy agency about to be built and all the startups in the Central West End, do you have a lot of confidence that St. Louis may soon turn around in a dramatic way?
I don't like the phrase turn around. You know, I think there's always some good things happening and some bad things happening. And I think the challenge in a city like ours is to make sure that the good things are outweighing the bad things. It's kind of a city that's on two divergent tracks. You know, right now there is a lot of investment. There's been a lot of public investment and a lot of private investment in the city the last several years, which is good. But at the same time, we've seen some services that the city provides decline, in all honesty. And we've seen a huge, devastating problem with violent crime. You know, I'm, from a government perspective, I am very eager to see the next mayor of St. Louis kind of pivot back to the basics, you know, the services, public safety, and I think establishing a more clear mission for a lot of city departments on, you know, motivating people in city government to really deliver top-notch services and think, you know, across departments, across agencies, about how we coordinate efforts to make sure the city gets safer. Because, I mean, nobody is going to dispute that we can have all the investment in the world, but if it doesn't, if the reality is it's not safe here, we're going to still have people choosing to leave, and you can't blame them. So, as always in St. Louis, the public safety issue, I think, looms large.
Scott, I think listening to you, it's clear through it all, you're trying to do the best job that you possibly can for the people that you represent. But you were in the paper not too long ago before you came in here, sort of painted as a villain. Today, in the wake of yesterday, you were portrayed as a hero. I'm just wondering, do you hear a lot of stuff on social media or personally as to your role in this whole thing?
I don't know. I mean, my efforts, you know, since I've been on the board of aldermen, have been to rein in some of the incentives that I think are excessive, and that also lead people to not trust local government as much as they otherwise might. And, you know, I think luckily yesterday there were several other no votes on the committee, so we were actually able to make some progress on this one bill in that area. But when you're an alderman, you're really a jack of all trades. So yesterday I was in the news a lot. Today I'm sure I'll be thinking about more mundane things like, you know, dumpsters in the alley and whatnot. And that's just kind of the job.
Yeah, we just covered that topic actually in the previous segment.
Right. Yeah. Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez in the weekend. Mm-hmm. Scott Ogilvie, great to have you on the program twice this week. And a fascinating day yesterday with both the MLS situation and also the Scott Trade Center situation. We appreciate you coming on and giving us your perspective from the inside. I know it helps educate our listeners, and hopefully things continue to move in a direction where there is compromise and deals made to make the area better. We appreciate the time, man. Have a great weekend, Scott.
You bet. Take care, guys.
See Scott Ogilvie with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. There's a guy. Here's a guy. Watch this, Doug. Here's a guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that comes from? Chris Hansen, Catch a Predator.
Oh, okay.
here's a guy who, when we asked him, the cat I think you asked him when he was in studio, if he had any aspirations beyond being alderman, he's like, no, I'm just kind of a regular guy. I got a wife, kid. It's kind of, I just want to do what's best for my constituents and the city. I'm kind of like, God bless. Because then it's like, all right, his skin in the game is to do what he thinks is right, not necessarily to do something that's going to boost his, you know, mayoral aspirations. And of course, by saying that, I don't want it to make it sound like anybody who has aspirations for a higher public office is therefore acting with nefarious intent. It's not my reasoning for saying it. But, you know, I think Scott dug in because he truly believed it was the right thing, not because it's going to get him attention for his mayoral campaign.
I think that's clear listening to him. When you think about it, he was portrayed as a villain for going to pick up his kid and not taking the vote until he cleared the air on social media. Now he's a, you know, he's a guy that helped the city come out on the better end while moving this project forward. So job well done. I think I am a little concerned. It does seem, while he's not ruling out the renovations, he said, you know, a new mayor's coming in and there's still some questions about the list that the Blues want for upgrades, but he did seem more optimistic about it when he was in studio than just now on the phone.
Well, I would agree with him that until you're able to get the crime problem under control, St. Louis is never going to boom again. It just won't. That's the image we have around the country, and that's the image of people. A lot of people have who live here, is that it's a dangerous place. You go to Ballpark Village in a Cardinal game, you go, this place is thriving. This is great. And then you drive 5 minutes north, and you say, what war was fought here? And until we get some of that turned around, until everybody feels like they can go to the city and not have to worry about being a crime victim, then I think we're in for continued tough times.
Which is one of Scott's, you know, major points. There is, from my standpoint, reason for optimism. And I'm not saying everyone should be optimistic. It's a case-by-case, specific element basis. But I do think what's going on from a tech standpoint in the city is super encouraging, because what it's going to do is not only give St. Louisans opportunity in that field, but also draw people from around the country to St. Louis for it. And ideally, that lays the foundation for whatever term you'd want to see it, growth or rebirth, you know, turnaround. I realize why somebody in office may not want to say that, because then it illustrates that they are heading in the wrong direction and person's in office and you don't want to be in office if somebody's saying it's heading in the wrong direction. So I get all that. But either way, something that is for the betterment of St. Louis. You're welcome to text and you're welcome to call in 855-CUB-TALK, 855-282-8255. Mike Falk, the Post-Dispatch, who covered it all, is going to give us his perspective coming up. And we have the Hot Shots email today, the morning after, at InsideSTL.com. I don't know, Iggy, if you'll be the target of these emails today based on the list and based on how you explained you are not bothered by the gang of first names coming after you on the fan page. I don't know, Doug. I haven't seen the emails.
Oh, who could know at this point?
No, no one could.
Not upset.
See? Doug, as a downtown resident, I promise to protect you from all crime and hide out with you behind a dumpster in case we get caught in the middle of gunfire. It's from Juan from PP Corp.
It's nice to know that you have a safety net.
Yeah, there's been gunfire right there by Channel 4 a few times.
Actually, pretty clean one.
oh, no.
It was just clean. Nobody'd really done any dirty business really in it. And so it didn't smell bad. I guess they'd pumped it. And the day before is a few inches of the fluid, the blue fluid. And I just put my feet in and my knees, and then I had
phone's ringing. The police are trying to find him right now.
Tim, I love listening to you. You are so wise and great. I want to be just like you. Okay. Also, can I get a table for 17 this weekend at Kirkwood Brew House?
Shouldn't be a problem.
Thanks, brah. Doug, that comes from Danny Tanner.
Danny Tanner. He's not related to Danny Packer.
No relation.
All right. But they say their names in a similar way, so they're probably from the same part of the country.
That doesn't exclude them from being relatives, for the record.
That's correct. Yeah. That also is true.
You don't really know that. Right. It could be.
Well, tomorrow it's happening. Tomorrow it's happening. Boing with Buds. That's what's going on tomorrow, Doug. It's at St. Charles Lane. It's the first one. We're introducing the first annual Bowling with Buds tournament presented by Bud Select at St. Charles Lane's. It's tomorrow. Saturday, January 28th. Register your team of five for $150 and get three games of bowling with shoe rental. There will be three flights of winners Beer and food specials plus more. Come out to St. Charles Lanes tomorrow from 1 to 5 to enjoy fellowship with other listeners and some 590 The Fan show host. Sign up your team of five now at InsideSTL.com. Iggy, I have a meeting. I know that sounds weird, but I have a meeting Saturday afternoon. Would it be better to come early? I think I'm going to get there early and then stay for like an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever works.
Whatever's easiest for you.
Schedule. Yeah, but I mean, what do you think? What do you think the move is?
Because this
is
kind of
1 to 5. One to five.
Right. What time's your meeting?
We are determining that, but the way it was left was we'll do it midday on Saturday. And I'm thinking, well, midday, it's kind of right around, like, if it's like at 1, then I'm, you know, I don't know how long the meeting will go, and I want to make sure that I am there.
Yeah, just come out whenever you can.
Doug, that's what I'll do. I'll come out whenever I can.
And let people know, too.
And I would like to bowl. I would like to bowl, because I did get a perfect attendance trophy at Redbird Lanes in the summer of 84.
I got one at Crestwood Bowl, and instead of spelling Doug Vaughn, they spelled it Doe Vaughn.
Well, if you come out tomorrow, your team could win. I know, thanks to Ray Arf's Bowling and Trophy for doing the trophies, Danny Packer said they're really good-looking. So 15 people are going to walk out with trophies.
Wow, wow, wow.
Nice.
But just come out. If you don't want to bowl, come out and drink.
Let me ask you a question.
Food specials. They just hang out and say hi.
They got gloves that Tim can put on his hand so his fingers fit in the hole.
Right.
Do they have that?
His fingers will fit in the hole.
Clip that off.
They have balls with pincer holes?
I don't even know why I answered that. I got done answering. So why did I answer it? Just walked me right into it. But Pete Weber wears a golf glove when he bowls, but he cuts the fingers out. But the rest of the glove is on there. So
that's kind why
of
does he fact. Do that?
Just gives him a better grip on
grip,
the ball.
Yeah.
You have a regular bowling glove that you wear?
I do not wear a glove, no.
Guys, will Iggy bowl all of his frames at once tomorrow in an attempt to prove that he is not mad? That comes from recaps.
See, now I find that funny. He went outside the box but turned it all into the same thing. But it's funny. He used some thought process went into that.
I think he could have used the hammerhead reference. I really do.
I found that funny. And it's real. I'm just having fun, guys. Don't.
I'm going to put you in the worst mood. You know what we have? We have Mike Falk coming. Then we have the Hot Shots email of the day. But now, Doug, we get to look back on the week that was courtesy of the great people at Bertarelli Cutlery, Bertarelli Paper. It's the Bertarelli Cutlery Cuts of the Week.
Hit the lever.
Cut of the Week is brought to you by Bertarelli Cutlery. Visit them on the Hill, online at BertarelliCutlery.com, or follow them on Facebook or Twitter at STL9. Cut one.
Kat, are you on the fan page?
No.
He's not on Facebook, Brad.
Why not?
He can't figure it out. Facebook? I couldn't figure it out.
Cut two.
Guys, Iggy gets more and more creepy every hour of the show.
That's why we can't ask Iggy follow-up questions. When he goes into that certain area, yeah, you know, that territory I'm talking about, it's not up to you to be a journalist and to pin him down.
Well, that's
on
my
something.
Instincts, just to keep digging.
You think I'm the only one that's ever seen a tranny that didn't know it was a tranny and thought it was hot until you saw the penis.
Cut three.
Can you believe Aubrey Kate won Tranny of the Year? Hashtag upset.
They have a Tranny of the Year contest? Oh, God. So how do you tell your parents, listen, I'm going to change my sex. Not only that, I'm going into porn. Boy, that's a left-right cross to any parent.
Cut four.
You know, some people think I'm a bit of a pervert boy.
Yeah, I know. Oh, gosh, I know. Yeah.
I never heard that.
Why do you talk about the porn? I have kibbs in the cow.
What?
Kibbs?
Next up, Senator and Mrs. Danforth. Next up, the little perv boy, Tim McKernan.
Hi. That's cool.
Lord and Lady Douchebag.
Cut five.
I've been to almost every city in Tennessee.
Oh, man,
I just don't remember seeing an really ugly girl.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
It just seems like every girl in Tennessee is just cute.
I bet if you looked harder, you could find some filly ugly as a mud fence.
Iggy, are the girls in Tennessee sexually active at a young age? It's from Jamie Moyer's Fancy Four.
In the backwoods, maybe.
Cut six.
This is titled Iggy a Idiot. Iggy a Idiot. Iggy, you mentioned several times yesterday that Mia Khalifa did not have her breasts enhanced. Are you delusional, or are you just a liar in caps and bold? Have you lost all credibility, and your list means nothing? Did you even meet George Jefferson? Have you even been to Hito? I think you just make up these little stories so people won't find out that you were bottoming for Doug every night. Regards, Beef Momo.
Awful. Beef Momo.
Awful. Iggy is ignoring.
He should.
Well, it's an idiot, not a idiot. You idiot.
How's it going, angry?
Cut 7.
And Larry took the Periscope to give his take.
I am venting about the wardrobe of one Vanna White to the letter turner on Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
And I would do Vanna White. No, I would not do Doug. He is not framed that way. I like guys as friends. That is it. I like more of the female kind. By the way, I am a boop and ass guy.
Doug, that's the show.
Yeah, I know. It's unfortunate that that's what it's become. But that's what it's been for years, so I guess I shouldn't expect anything to change.
It is what it is.
Larry took the Periscope this morning with the Periscope titled Thoughts on a Friday Morning. I haven't seen or heard this, so I have to take a listen, Plowhawk.
I would not show you them titties, because I'm on a college campus.
What are we doing?
But anyway, getting back to what I was talking about, I'll be tired in a little bit, but right now, I am doing what Doug says to most people, and pulling it up by that bootstrap. When I do my stuff on Fridays, I play certain songs that I like. Like Shove and Dance, by Walk the Moon, Closing Time, and some WWE songs, some songs that are done by certain artists like Living Colors, Cult of Personality, and Rob Zombie's
A lot of dramatic
Never Gonna Stop.
It's like Jim Rome
reading an email. Smell Like Teen Spirit.
Right.
But the melody was somewhat used for Diamond Dallas Page's theme song in WCW. Most of the people that I know that listen to me on Tim Station listen to me on this station too. Like Keith Yaborski.
What?
I didn't understand almost all of that.
Well, what it sounds like is when Larry takes his shifts overnight at Lewis and Clark Community College on their FM station, he plays music that he likes, such as Walk the Moons, Shut Up and Dance, but also WWE anthems that also cross over as pop hits, such as CM Punk's, but what really is Living Colors, Cult of Personality. Was that 88?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, Living Color. And they also did Glamour Boys.
Okay.
Well, it's his show, so he plays his song
his music.
List. It's like when Iggy does a list, it's his list.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie West, former guitar player from Mountain, is performing at the Lewis and Clark campus. I wonder if Larry has access to tickets.
I would imagine he does.
You would think so.
Larry, if you're listening, I need 2 tickets to Leslie West.
Guys, is Larry sedated with laughing gas in this Periscope session? Thanks. That's Juan, and he's in the PP Corp. Timmy Recap says, my goal is to make Iggy quit. That's from the 314.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, that's not going to happen. Recaps.
Again, Recaps. I didn't call you out. Doug did.
Oh, well, okay. Jeez. Sorry.
Jesus. And someone
you think
else.
You can write. You think you can just troll somebody and give your names and you're anonymous, but you get to rip us.
I'm with you. Forget I'm that. With you on that, but no recaps.
Stacy Recht says Iggy. Stacy says Iggy is the star of the week. It's always that way on the text inbox.
It's tough because I feel like the Plow All-Star break had an incredible week. But obviously, Iggy's really, really taken ownership here over the last 48 hours.
And I don't
it's kind
like
of fun.
That.
It's kind of fun to see guys battle and not win by default.
I don't like that.
Next man up, Tim.
I don't like to be the center of attention on the show because it shouldn't be that way. I'm like a little cog in the background. And
do you own clogs?
I don't want to. I've never owned a pair. Well, I did. I take that back. You know,
don't argue with yourself.
Cooks in the kitchen wear clogs for some reason.
What?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll have to follow up with that on Monday. But Mike Falk joins us right now on the Appliance Discount Phone Line. Good morning, Mike.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
There he is.
Yesterday was bizarre, and following your Twitter timeline was just quality entertainment. As you were sitting there, were you going, what in the hell is going on? Or did you actually know that this was kind of the way it was going to wind up playing out and that it had to go through these various channels and, you know, votes to get to where it wound up?
I had no idea what was going to happen. To be honest, I mean, I've covered enough government meetings to know that these kinds of things can happen, but it still caught me off guard. I think that they called the committee meeting because they assumed that they were going to get the votes. It didn't happen. And then really a last second decision by Stephen Conway to vote against it, even though he supported it, gave them the loophole they needed to be able to incorporate some things that Scott Ogilvy was asking for in terms of establishing an entertainment tax so the city can get that revenue and trying to get some funding from the TIF district, the taxing district that Paul McKee's Northside Development has that overlaps the stadium site. And they added those things. It wasn't, they didn't put them in there exactly the way that Ogilvy wanted, but they slapped it together in less than an hour, and it was enough to get it out of the committee 5-4. So, and really I had, you know, a lot of people had left the committee room, were wandering around in the hallway, and then in between the first vote and the next one, and I saw Stephen Conway come back in, and he's just kind of sitting there sipping his coffee by himself. And I asked him, so when do you think, you said that you voted this against it so you could bring it back up. When do you think you're going to bring it back up? And he said, 8 minutes.
And so, that's unbelievable.
And so I thought, okay, well, something's happening. This is all coming back, and everyone's on Twitter, you know, lamenting the death of MLS. And, you know, it's like in football, you're like reverse. That's so, and that's what happened. They passed it. So everybody, everything was coming up roses and daisies and every other flower for the MLS group yesterday.
Don't you find it a little odd if the team or the folks behind the push to bring a team and build the stadium weren't against that ticket tax? If they weren't against it, why wasn't it part of the plan in the first place? That's something that Scott had brought up, which I also find curious.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's not one I asked. So I think that the I think it has to do with the structuring of ticket prices. So I think it affected their business model and revenue projections that way. That's really more of a guess than anything. But they were willing to, and, you know, and they were also hearing from a lot of fans who said, we'll pay that tax, you know, especially people in the county who don't have a vote on this, but are just, are desperate to see it happen. And so I think they received, you know, enough positive feedback from fans. You know, it could still affect ticket prices and sales, but, they were willing to go halfway. It's a 5% tax, and they were willing to go with 2.5%, and that was enough for Ogilvy, and they project that'll get the city anywhere between $7.5 million to $12 million in new revenue over the next 30 years. So the city's getting more out of this deal than was originally proposed in December. So I think some of the opponents feel better about that. I think they maybe still oppose it, but they like the fact that you had perhaps, you know, there was $20 million dropped off the asking price, and then with with the combined other revenue sources, the city, you combine the savings and the money that the new revenue that may be coming in under the plan, you're talking about maybe $37 million for the city in the long run. So people feel good about the negotiation.
Yeah, it would seem if it goes through, you're gonna have some construction jobs for a couple of years, and then a few stadium jobs afterwards, and the city's going to make some money on it. I think the opponents can always claim, well, it needs to go to other, we have more important issues, but it does seem like it's a good deal for the city. Would you expect a lot of opposition moving forward when it goes before the full board and then the public?
Yeah, I think you're still going to see a lot of opposition because, you know, people rightly bring up the fact that this city has, you know, they have, there's already some high tax rates in the city. I think that there will be, you know, criticisms of the tax increases involved in Metrolink and the stadium. You know, people that are, say, in North St. Louis, the alderman Samuel Moore at yesterday's committee hearing, who was holding up posters of blight in his community and calling his own community the third world, and saying that, you know, there's just the budget is tight. They're projecting a shortfall in the next fiscal year. They're, you know, there's all kinds of city services that they say aren't being adequately funded. So that's all gonna remain part of the debate. And on the pro side, you know, they're gonna argue that this will bring economic development. It'll bring more offshoot tax revenue in terms of the businesses that spawn off and the other economic activity of bringing these people into the city. So, I don't know how to call it a great deal necessarily, but I think people can say that it's a much better deal than was first brought to the city.
If that proposal is passed by the board, that it goes for a public vote, and if they pass that Metrolink tax and it is put up for a public vote, don't you think it's going to come down to which side mobilizes its base better? Because it's not going to be a huge turnout.
Right. Yeah, that is what it comes down to. It's municipal elections aren't that sexy. People don't, a lot of people don't follow them as closely as the presidential election. So it will be low turnout, and it depends who shows up. Although I would, if it does come down to who's more mobilized, I would favor the soccer people, just because they're kind of already getting mobilized. I don't think that there's like an organized opposition to this. There's plenty of opposition, but they're not necessarily organized into one unit. So at least that's the case right now. So we'll see. On the other side, a lot of the soccer people I've talked to are people that don't live in the city limits. They're people that want to spend their money on soccer and go to games in the city, but they might not necessarily have a vote. So there's a ton of support in the metro area. How much there is in the city, I really don't have a good gauge on.
Mike Falk, Post-Dispatch, with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. It's the Appliances Counter phone lines. Mike, we've gotten a couple of guests from the alderman this morning, and Christina Ingrassia and Scott Ogilvie's comments. And while a lot of people, of course, are intrigued by the MLS situation, really, I think perhaps more so the politics of it, whereas some are certainly wanting to see professional soccer here in St. Louis, I think a number of people have become more aware and maybe even more concerned, if you were to go by per capita, on what the situation is with the Scott Trade Center. Now, Ogilvie was in studio with us earlier this week, and he expressed very good deal of confidence that at some point in 2017, that measure for Scott Trade Center renovations would get passed. But Christina Ingrassia said she wasn't necessarily as sold and expressed, quote, great concern regarding that. How do you see that playing out, especially based on what you saw yesterday?
I think the biggest arguments in terms of not necessarily policy, but just the public relations argument is going to be that you have the Blues there. They're a longtime institution, relatively successful in recent history, although I understand this year they're in a bit of a funk. But, you know, and then you've got, and then the fact that it's a facility that has already been built. It's already owned by the city. It's in City Hall's backyard. It's connected to the Opera House. It's already owned by the city. So, you know, what are we gonna you know, it's kind of, the argument is that it's already our obligation. We're not talking about a new obligation. It's one that we have to, and they point to, again, the economic benefits of having this team drawing people downtown, the fact that 60% of the events there are hockey, so you have all other kinds of things also coming into that facility. Although, you know, people, the ownership have been honest that they want this over the life of the building. They want all this money for renovations. They'll put some into and they say over the life of the building, and that is roughly 30 years. So, you know, I think a question that will probably keep coming up more is, well, what happens after 30 years if we're, you know, if we're paying for this over the course of the next 30 years, as soon as those payments are up, are we going to be asked to build a whole new stadium, even though we just put, you know, tens of millions into this one? And where's that stadium going to be? What happens to the one that you say has outlasted its life here in City Hall's backyard? So, but I do think it does have, the argument is probably a little more compelling to aldermen, just because it is an existing piece of city infrastructure.
Mike Falk, Post-Dispatch, our guest here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, giving us his perspective on the MLS and Scott Trade Center discussions yesterday with the Ways and Means Committee. Mike, always appreciate the time. Thank you so much, sir.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Mike Falk with us here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. He is the Civic Watchdog Reporter for the Post-Dispatch. Doug, I like that title.
Watchdog.
Civic Watchdog.
Yeah. No,
isn't that
different.
What Herb Humphreys was? Wasn't he a watchdog?
Yeah. Herb Humphreys got it covered. Nightside.
I like that.
Now, watchdog, that's different than an attack dog.
Right.
That's more along the lines of the aggressive investigative reporter. He's the attack dog. Ambush journalism. This is just a watchdog.
And one of the responsibilities of a watchdog is to enter a person's home and enjoy recreational.
No, sir. I don't believe that's in the job description.
But did it happen?
I don't know. Why? Oh, Herb Humphreys, you're getting back to him. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that one. Mm-hmm. Don't make me tell that story.
I was asking questions.
I thought we'd moved on from got it covered. Nightside.
Man, I like that. God, I like that.
Herb Humphreys, got it covered. Nightside. It's kind of fun to say. Why don't you try it?
Yeah.
Herb Humphreys, got it covered. Not sad.
You have to say it like that.
Yeah. He's a Texan, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yeah. If you want to be dramatic, that's how you say it.
Who was he?
If you don't know much about the new business, I don't know.
We have Peaches and Herb as obviously one of the greats, but I would say Herb Tarlick from WKRP on my Mount Rushmore of Herbs.
Yeah.
Oh.
Who you got, Doug? Herb Washington, maybe?
Herb Ragland.
He was the designated runner for the old Oakland A's.
How about Herb Ragland of the Blues?
That's a good one.
Hubie Brooks was with the Expos and the Mets.
That's Hubie. It's not Herb.
But still.
Yeah, we're talking Herb.
Herbert Humphrey?
Someone had it covered Nightside.
He wasn't.
Oh, I meant to say Hubert.
Hubert Davis was the shooting guard.
Vice President. Hubert Humphrey.
Well, we just said it's Herb, and then when he went off the menu, you scolded him, and then you just went off the menu yourself.
Well, I was just trying to get a close name. That's
Herb.
All.
Herb Washington, Herb Tarlick. That's what we got in Peaches and Herb.
Herb Ragland.
And Herb Ragland.
Then we got it.
We're done. All
so
right,
now let's
have
go
lunch.
To names that sound similar.
Hubie Brooks. Was with
Herbert
the
Humphrey.
The Mets.
Hubie Brown.
I think we're done now.
Governor Jerry Brown.
Hmm.
Term limits got him in California.
Was he married to Linda Ronstadt?
I believe
Jerry
he was.
Brown was.
Yeah. He's still, he just now stepped down.
Someone.
He's not the governor still?
He is up this year, I believe. Term limits got him. Ran for president in 92 and was actually leading. And then Bill Clinton became the comeback kid. Innocent days.
If those were innocent, like back in
turned
that,
out to be not that innocent.
But I'm
not
saying
that innocent.
The political discourse back then, which seemed like it was over the top, is nothing compared to where we are today.
No, we never had an election like the one we just had.
I blame you, Doug.
This is the end of the innocence. And that's interesting because it's Don Henley singing, but it's Bruce Hornsby on the piano. That's kind of fun.
I think the innocence died when Kennedy got shot.
So people say. And I wonder if that's what the end of the innocence song is about. Sometimes I feel like it's about a woman losing her virginity in a field, but I can't tell. It's either about an assassination in Dallas or a woman losing her virginity in a meadow.
The innocence can be restored, I think, when
that's how abstract the lyrics are.
When the show Blossom went on the air, I think the innocence was restored, and when it was canceled, then we lost the innocence.
My Mayimbialik.
Okay.
You agree with that?
Yeah. I agree with my Mayimbialik for sure.
This is the end of the innocence.
You guys can harmonize.
Yeah. There's that thing again.
You know, there are certain teams that they say they can't finish. We're a show that can't finish. Well, like, we did some legitimate interviews, right? And here we are just scuffling around at the end of the show singing songs.
You think we can't Herb finish. Humphrey's talk isn't topical? Really? Herb Humphrey's. Got it covered.
Like, we see the finish line, and we're like, okay, pretty good show. I think we can make it. Boom, fumble, turnover.
This is ramble like old men in the rest home talking about phrases they heard 40 years ago.
Hey, Doug. Doug, can you get me a graham cracker?
I was upset yesterday to read that Mike Connors had died, the guy who played Mannix.
He died?
Yes.
Mannix was a great show.
Mm-hmm. 91 years old. Basketball player at UCLA when he got spotted.
Guys, you guys can't finish, but Doug, I'll finish all.
Okay, who?
Shrewsbury size queen.
There's a lot of people out in Shrewsbury.
Yeah, who would have thought? Show. Signal must be really strong into Shrewsbury. Penetrating the walls of Kenrick. We are 590 the fan.
Shrewsbury size queen has been suspended.
Don't play that drop.
Suspended a period of 2 days' time. Thank you, Llewellyn's Pub, for the fine, handsome, leather-bound suspension logule.
I really am.
Business products for this handsome ink pen that I'm using.
I may be a jinx. Back in the day, you know, every celebrity that we got on for Martin seemed to pass away like months after getting him on. I have not watched an episode of Mannix in 20 years. I was flipping through TV7 the other day, MeTV, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I was taping Leave It to Beaver.
One of the Channel 4 channels.
Yeah, I was taping Leave It to Beaver and Beverly Hillbillies episodes.
What's wrong with you, boy?
And I saw Mannix. I said, I haven't seen that show forever. I taped like 7 episodes of Mannix. A week later, he's dead.
Ah, how was the show? As good as you remembered it?
I love that show, yeah. It brought back memories. He was good in that.
Simpler time. That's when we were all innocent.
I want to watch some Mary Tyler Moore shows again after her death. That's a show that still holds up today. You watch it, and it still makes perfect sense today.
Murray Slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Murray Head, One Night in Bangkok. And Murray.
Murray Bannerman.
Eddie Murray. Tough interview.
Jan Murray. Somehow got on the Hollywood Squares often. Don't know what else he did.
Jan Michael Vincent?
Jan Brady.
You're off the menu again.
Eve Plum.
Now, when we're talking Jans, does Jan Stenerud count since he spells it the same way as Jan?
Interesting. That's do we go pronunciation or spelling? That kind of puts the action on us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does. It sure enough does.
Guys, there's like 1,000 people in Shrewsbury, and I think they all listen to this show. It's from Jamie Moyer's Fancy Foyer.
Now, Stenerud was the one with that foot that was chopped off so we could kick 80-yard field.
Tom Dempsey.
And
Tom
then he broke Dempsey. The record. Doug, when you get a really good night's sleep and wake up the next morning, you feel better. You can take on more. It's the best that you can be. How do you get a better night's sleep? It's a great question. The guys at Mattress Direct have products that are designed to help you sleep at the ideal comfort, support, and temperature. Now they have a smart motion base that tracks your quality of sleep all night long, and you get a report on your cell phone or tablet with overnight. And over several nights, it measures your time of sleep, your time in deep sleep, as well as your heart rate, respiration rate, to give you personalized information about the way you actually sleep and tips on how you can sleep better. Mattress Direct is a St. Louis-based company with 15 showrooms. They open the newest one in Alton, Illinois. They're on both sides of the river, so no matter where you live in the St. Louis area, there's a Mattress Direct near you. Go online at Mattress Direct. It's STLMattressDirect.com. STLMattressDirect.com. It's STL because they're from here. You can find them online, STLMattressDirect.com, STLMattressDirect.com, or call 314-4DIRECT to get your mattress direct. It's time for the Hot Shots email of the day. Well, we're giving away a Lemmings lunch, and here we go. Howdy, politics is crazy. If the aldermen are confused, they should use the girl next door method for voting. Vote for the proposal that does not have a dad or grandmother. Vote for the proposal that brings the most family and friends to the bar. And vote for the proposal that's related to the bar owner. If that doesn't work, it's time to bring in Joshua. Once he busts out Little Angels for the Ways and Means Committee, they'll know what to do. Maybe Joshua could impart some wisdom on how to get pumped up before a show. I can see Antonio French in a City Hall restroom splashing cold water on his face.
They want this. They love you. They want you to act like you're defending North City so you can be mayor.
In the end, I believe common sense will prevail and the stadium issue will pass. Why? Because it doesn't look like a hammerhead shark. Some Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech.
Bill Pullman's Independence Day speech.
He covered a lot of ground.
Probably been listening to this show too much.
Guys, I'm usually pretty clean when I'm hungover. I can get a little frisky. After 10 years of absolute nonstop vile, that miserable old Queen Vaughn finally decided he's had enough when I made a lighthearted golden shower joke this ma'am. It's understandable, and I would like to formally apologize over a bucket of suds on Saturday. It's been 3 years since we've last had a conversation, so you're kind of like my white whale. Prepare yourself for a rectal harpoon, boy pig? Hugs and kisses, Matt, who bowls at Hank's.
I didn't care for it.
Why would you read that one?
I mean, the sea monster stacks them in the order he thinks is going to score the most runs.
Matt, who bowls at boy pigs.
Right. This is the moment we have all been waiting for. This was no ordinary day, no. This was Geneseo versus University game day. Doug from University had the first move of the big chess match. He wore his leopard print headband proud. He straddled the chair reverse cowgirl like Slater at the max. Just then, the doors burst open as Iggy frantically ran through in a panic and yelled, "The feds are after me because I totally did not watch porn with an underage girl in it. Yep, I didn't even watch that one, that's for sure. Oh, and on a side note, I'm totally not interested in underage shark women. Ha, JK. And WCG, I have a message for you, sir. You don't need me to finish your emails, you beautiful boy child. There's an email of the day champ inside of you somewhere, little buddy. You just have Misty Plops find it with his wrinkle rat. One love, bae. That's from the Blue Collar Cuckie.
Blue Collar Cuckie.
Hey, boys, maybe the list was getting old and not the jokes, just a thought. I heard Grandpa and his war buddy live in the Villages in Florida. Did Eagleton negotiate McKee's deal, too? Thank God Ogilvy does this full-time, even though the salary sucks. In the book, Michael was upset that Fredo talked about the list of top 30 porn stars to someone outside the family, making jokes about his choices. He then set in motion the hit on Fredo whilst fishing. I'm smart. It's not like they say. Steve Wildwood.
Steve in Wildwood.
Guys, Plops here. That picture of Matt the Bat wearing the TMA hat is cool. Teehee. I know I'm not the only one that noticed his eyes look a little red in the picture, like maybe he'd been crying. Well, come hither and look a bit closer. In the reflection from the microwave behind him, you can see Tim's dad, the very angry look on his face, and he's holding a baseball bat wrapped with barbed wire. If I'm putting the pieces together quickly, it appears Tim's dad laid down a beating on poor old Matt and forced him to take a picture so that Tim would have something to show his friends. Mark of a good father, if you ask me. And if I know Tim's dad like I think I know Tim's dad, after the picture was taken, he dropped the bat and handed Matt a fat stack of hundreds. Straight up cash, homie. Then the two kicked back on Matt's lazy boy and watched Wet Pink while enjoying root beer floats. Nice little Thursbin. Misty Plops.
Misty Plops, assistant program director.
Oy vey, Iggy, you've had been a very bad monkey. Did you know that hammerhead sharks are very sexual from a young age? They breed at 2 years old and lay between 12 and 16 eggs. Fun fact, hasta la vista, it's from Jamie Moyer's fancy foyer.
Sharks don't come from eggs. Jamie Moyer's fancy foyer.
Who's the guy got a bang to get his email read around here? I should have known. I've not been treated this rough since the first time I had sex in my life with my buddy Pete's dad.
That's an awful sentence. It's just a bad sentence in the English language.
Well, there's more. I lost my place. And in van. 2-1. I've not been treated this rough since the first time I had sex in my life with my buddy Pete's dad under the bleachers at the 1982 father-son dance. Or the second time I had sex in my life with my buddy Mikey's dad in the parking lot after the 1982 father-son's dance. Indian Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man.
And I'm not laughing at that.
I'm laughing at
something totally unrelated. Injun Joe's Cave Ride Magic Man.
Hey, boys.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
This is Clyde, captain of the SS Taste Me off the coast of Japan. We specialize in shark illegal finning. A man named Iggy listed you as a reference on his job application, and we had a few questions. Honestly, he's freaking us out. Being shark finners, we kill a hell of a lot of sharks and usually just toss them overboard. However, this Iggy dude wants to keep the bodies and preserve the heads for, quote, his own use. He kept insisting that we name every shark Busty Buffy as well for some unknown reason. Should we hire this dude? Heh, JK. Stubby Clap.
Stubby Clap.
Hey guys, I have a Friday fun fact for you straight from sharkfacts.org. Number one, sand tiger sharks are most active at night. Number two, sharks do not chew their food, they swallow it whole. Number three, the hammerhead shark has the best sense of smell and recently finished in a surprising 29th on an AM morning variety show, critically acclaimed top 30 pornography stars, despite being sexually active at a very early age. Remember, all porn stars are the same, except just some of them are better than others. That comes from Mr. Nipples.
Mr. Nipples. He's new.
Look, that's what we have for the Hot Shots email today. Show me what you got, little mama. Show me what you got, little lady.
Three stood out, and there was a good batch. Mr. Nipples, Steve and Wildwood, and Bill Pullman's speech. I think I'm going to go Steve and Wildwood, and it was close.
I like that one, but I'm going to go with a fellow by the name of Engine Joe's K-Ride Magic Man.
I'm going with Steve in Wildwood.
Dagnabbit, Lucas!
Steve Wildwood has shipped the email of the day, and that is a Lemmings lunch at Hot Shots. Time for Frank Cusimano in the Hollywood Casino Press Box. This is the Lion's Choice famous roast beef handoff to Frank Cusimano and the Hollywood Casino Press Box for the Plow All-Star Break, for Iggy, for the Sea Monster, for my brother Kevin, for Douglas Elvin Vaughn, for Jimmy the Cat Hayes. I'm Tim McKernan. This has been the Ryan Kelly Morning After on the all-new 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios.